Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Moving targets of terrorism. Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist and your terrorist therapist. Yes, moving targets of terrorism. It seems like so many people are so filled with hate these days that they are almost indiscriminately targeting this hate towards all kinds of different people. It almost doesn't seem as though it matters who the targets are anymore, just as long as they can explode something, shoot something, kill people, injure people. That's the goal. I'm going to talk to you today about three incidents that happened during this past week that proved my point. And yes, indeed, it is getting, it's getting scary, it's getting it's not making any sense anymore. When things don't make sense, they're even scarier than when they do and they're still violent. So I'll give you, I'll start with a terrorist, in fact, the leader of ISIS, who is targeting the same normal target that terrorists have targeted and that we classically still are targeting, and that is non-believers. So I'm talking about the ISIS leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. And why he's in the news this week is because he just put out an 18-minute video rallying his troops. And again, his target is the same target it's always been and will likely always still be, until he is captured. He is the world's most wanted man. The U.S. has a $25 million prize on his head. And I am pretty sure he is going to keep going after non-believers. Now, his video, when he put out his video this week, it was reported as his having more PR advisors than a Hollywood actor. And that's because they were making the point that things in the video may have looked just casual, but everything was there for a reason. And people in the video were seated in a certain place for a reason. Everything, it was as if a top publicist had directed the whole thing. Now, this is the first time he's been seen in 5 years. And he, the last time, was in 2014 when he gave a sermon from Mosul declaring the caliphate and declaring that it was ruled by him. So it seems fitting that he now appears 5 years later when the caliphate, the land, has been destroyed. All but destroyed, essentially destroyed. And he is the leader who took over in 2010 after the assassination of Abu Omar al-Baghdadi. In this newly released video, it shows him chatting casually to his commanders. And he is looking as though he is giving them instructions. He is making plans, planning strategies, battle plans, and so on. And it, of course, is not a coincidence that he is appearing in this video today, this week, because of the fact that he appeared first when the caliphate started. And of course, he was all excited to announce it, especially announcing himself as the leader. And now with the caliphate all but destroyed. When people, in previous shows, I talked about how as the forces were closing in on the last part of the caliphate and ISIS was making its last stand, there were people walking out, you know, surrendering, or but still expressing allegiance to ISIS, but being forced out of this last shred of land. And a lot of these people were saying, and certainly were thinking, where is Baghdadi? He was our leader. He's how the reason we got here, came here in the first place. This was going to be the center of ISIS's stronghold that was going to grow over the world. And so where is he? You know, here we are. Many of us are dead. The rest of us are limping out of here, starving. So where is he? Where's what he promised? So this video is meant to be proof that he's still alive, number one, because there have been lots of close calls where the U.S. and allied troops have almost caught him, or so the reports go. And not only did he want to prove that he was still alive, but also to prove that he was still very much involved in making plans to take over the West, if not the world. So, as I said, it shows him making battle plans and strategies, and the message is, the scripted, crafted message, publicity, is that he is still in control and that he's not in a cave hiding. So, he's 48 years old. You know, he, of course, as I said, he has a bounty on his head, but when you think about how it took 10 years to catch Osama bin Laden, and, you know, it's not surprising that it is that he is, has still not been caught. Although in 2016, that was when he made a mistake, and the U.S. was very close to capturing him and killing him. He made the mistake of making a 45-second radio call, exhorting his fighters to keep on fighting in the caliphate. And this call was intercepted by electronic eavesdropping. But by the time they sort of got their act together to try to bomb him there or some otherwise capture him there, he already had disappeared. Okay, so there we have it. This is sort of straightforward. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, of course, he is trying to kill non-believers. Non-believers in radical Islam, of course. Now, what else do we have? There have been the churches, of course, that have been attacked. You know, people purposely targeting churches. Notre Dame, Sri Lanka on Easter. Notre Dame at the beginning of the Easter week, Holy Week. And then St. Patrick's Day right after Notre Dame. Now, in Sri Lanka, that attack, and you can hear more about that in a previous show. I talk about the attack on Sri Lanka. Also, the Sri Lanka attack on Easter was supposed to be retribution for the New Zealand attack on mosques. However, it didn't just happen right after, you know, all of a sudden because of this New Zealand attack. Because actually, at the attack on Sri Lanka, on churches in Sri Lanka and very expensive hotels had been planned for 7 or 8 years. Now, did the New Zealand attack perhaps make them decide to set it off then? Maybe, but really even more significant was the fact that it was on Easter Day. Then we have the man in Sunnyvale, California, that I also talk about on a previous show, who did a ramming attack. And as it turned out, as I suspected and mentioned in my previous show, he was trying to, it wasn't just, he didn't just pick this group coincidentally, although it was an impulsive attack, but he thought he was ramming a group of Muslims, a family of Muslims, or people who he thought were Muslim. So that was who, you know, he was after. Then, of course, now the two others that happened this past week that I'm going to be talking about for the rest of the show, are the attack on a synagogue in Poway, California, by a man who, of course, was targeting Jews, but he had already made an arson attempt on a mosque. So he was sort of an equal opportunity hater. Then I'm also going to talk to you about Mark Stephen Domingo from Reseda, California, who had a plot to, he wanted to perpetrate an attack even bigger than the Las Vegas attack, but he had a whole bunch of different targets in mind. He was deciding between a crowds such as those on the Santa Monica Pier, the military, a base, or police, or Christians, or Jews going to synagogue, or the far right. Talk about being an equal opportunity hater. Well, we'll talk about these two men, these two attacks, or one attack and one almost attack, because Mark Domingo's plot was foiled, when we come back, so stay tuned. Welcome back. Today we're talking about moving targets of terrorism. The fact that there are so many haters, there's really an epidemic of haters, and what's was really sad is that so many of them are influenced by ones that went before. There seems to be right now a cluster of haters all together, in a very short period of time. And that either is because of the confluence of the holidays, like Easter and Easter week and Passover, those things bring out when the targets are religious targets, bring out those kinds of people. But I think there is also just a general increase and, people saying that an attack is retribution for the New Zealand attack, for example, or just using that as an excuse as a way to express their hate, time to express their hate. So I'm going to talk to you about, first of all, a 26-year-old named Mark Stephen Domingo, who was arrested on April 26th. Then I'll talk to you about the Poway synagogue attack that was on April 27th. So Mark Stephen Domingo, he was born and lived in Reseda, California. Now, Reseda, California is in the San Fernando Valley. Maybe you've seen some movies like Valley Girl and all that. Kind of like one of the least places that you would expect to have a terrorist grow. And he isn't a typical terrorist, though, not unlike Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. He wasn't targeting non-believers in radical Islam. Some of them actually were non-believers, but that's not why he was picking them. He's an interesting guy, a very mixed up guy. He's a U.S.-born man of Filipino descent. He was an army veteran who converted to Islam. And he also claimed that his plot that was intercepted was going to be retribution for New Zealand. But it started his trajectory towards his arrest when the plot was, and when he had developed the plot enough to be arrested, actually took longer than that. Now, as I said before the break, he thought about a whole bunch of different people, kinds of people to target, whether it would just be crowds on the Santa Monica Pier, or a military base, or police, or Christians, or Jews. He was talking about targeting a Jew walking to synagogue, or the far right. So he was arrested on April 26th for suspicion of plotting a terror attack. And it was this day, because that was when he received a package from an FBI undercover agent. Now, he thought that this package contained a live bomb, but it was actually an inert IED, that this undercover agent had, you know, disguised as a real bum, as a live bum, and he had been trailing him, the undercover agent, had been in conversations with him for months. It all started when Mark Stephen Domingo started writing things online about how he wanted to be a martyr for ISIS and commit jihad. And it actually started on March 3rd when he wrote, America Needs Another Vegas Event. Because that would weaken, and this is quote, weaken America by giving them a taste of the terrorism they gladly spread all over the world. So this clue was what caught the attention of an FBI informant who then began a conversation with him and began a relationship. In mid-March, he posted that he wants to do killings for the March 14th New Zealand attack. And that was when, again, that was really the main thing that caught the FBI informant's attention and put him under constant surveillance. Now, this very in-depth, I mean, I must say one thing we can all feel good about is that in numerous things that I've talked about on the Terrorist Therapist Show, I have given examples of plots that were stopped by FBI informants and agents because they would catch them online and get them involved in a relationship with them so that the wannabe terrorist trusts them and then asks for their help and feels like they are in this together. In fact, in this case, Mark Stephen Domingo was calling this FBI informant his brother. And so they ask for help and they share their plans for how they're going to commit mayhem and all of that. Now, of course, the attorneys for these people whose plots have been caught, one of their main arguments, defenses, is entrapment. They try to claim, the lawyers for these men, try to claim that they would not really have perpetrated an attack, but that they were encouraged by the FBI informants, these people who form relationships with them, and that that's why they went as far as they did, because it was really part of this relationship. They were two guys plotting this thing together, or sometimes it's three guys. So, now the reason why this FBI informant and others often get the person, the wannabe terrorist, to change their plan from guns to IEDs, because this is to get them to postpone actually carrying out the plan. Because, and this guy, for example, Mark Stephen Domingo, had rifles and guns, and he could have at any time actually gone out somewhere and started shooting. So the FBI agent was trying to delay this by, you know, keeping him chatting. And so yes, this Mark Domingo was boasting of owning weapons. This is online and in conversation with the FBI agent. Boasted of owning weapons and that he had 80 pounds of nails that were going to become the shrapnel for this bomb. And he said that the nails were long enough to penetrate the human body and puncture internal organs. So, you know, that is rather sadistic and sick. He said that he wanted to commit, quote, mass casualties, unquote, whether that be by shootings or bombings. Now, his history is super interesting. He was an Army veteran, as I said. He was in the Army from September 12th to September 2012 to January 2013. And this included 4 months in Afghanistan. And after he came back from Afghanistan, he was kicked out of the army because he had a violent clash in Afghanistan. First he was demoted, and then he was kicked out before his enlistment contract was over, and he didn't receive an honorable discharge. He was kicked out 1 month after he returned. Now, so far, they're keeping it kind of hush-hush what he actually did in Afghanistan, other than we know it was violent. And he was consumed by hate. He wanted to get revenge for the, or so he said, for the New Zealand killing of Muslims in the mosques. Well, again, though, as I told you before, there were so many various targets that he was thinking of. It wasn't just for the killing of the Muslims in the New Zealand attack. And then he had a girlfriend who's now an ex-girlfriend. They were girlfriend and boyfriend for a year. And she said that he had converted to Islam, that he went to prayers every Friday night. She thought it was 2 months ago, but according to the leader of the Islamic Center of Reseda, he started coming there 3 months ago. So now she was connecting it to the fact that 2 months ago she had a miscarriage with his baby, and that he was going to the mosque to help him cope with his being devastated about her miscarriage. She said that he was a really good man. You know, the family and girlfriends and all these people, you know, they're all very good men, right? She talked about how he would care for a stray cat. She said he wasn't happy with his time in the military, and he was now frustrated with his job in sales for a security service. He was living with his brother and his grandmother in Reseda, and his brother said that he hoped that the Islam, converting to Islam would give him guidance. Well, I'll continue with this, finishing up the story about Mark Stephen Domingo when we come back, and I will tell you about the man who was the shooter, perpetrated an attack at the Poway Synagogue shooting. So stay tuned. Welcome back. Today we're talking about how people who have hate in their heart are going after moving targets to perpetrate terrorist attacks. It's like the flavor of the day. You heard how this man who I was just talking about, Mark Stephen Domingo, had thought about attacking all kinds of groups of people. And in the end, he settled on attacking a far right group that was supposed to have a rally in Long Beach. They were called the United Patriots National Front. And he was working with this FBI agent and another man connected to the FBI agent. And they were supposedly helping him to create a bomb that was going to be like the bomb that was used in the Boston Marathon. Now, as I said before, in the end, they, of course, didn't give him a real bomb. They gave him something that was supposed to look like a real bomb, but and that he thought was a real bomb that he was going to use in this attack, but that was really an inert IED. So he settled on this rally of this far-right group in Long Beach, but it turned out that that rally was canceled for unknown reasons or reasons that were probably not related to this man's planned attack, because they arrested him before he got anywhere near this rally. Now, as I was telling you a little bit about his background, which was, you know, really interesting. He's a man who cares for stray cats. He couldn't possibly be a terrorist, according to his ex-girlfriend, right? But his violent clash in Afghanistan, which got him kicked out of the army, is a clue that something was not right, at least by then. Or at that time, you know, does he have PTSD because of his experience on the front lines in the army? He went 3 months ago to the Islamic Center of Reseda and told them that he wanted to be converted to Islam. And they did the conversion of him 3 months ago. And the reason what they said, this is really strange, they said that that usually takes them longer to decide that they will convert somebody. But this man's story was rather interesting, and it got them to convert him sooner. They said that he told them that he had been anti-Islam, but now he wants to be convert to Islam because he saw the mistreatment of Muslims. Now, is he talking about the war in Afghanistan? You know, that certainly there were Muslims who were being attacked in our war in Afghanistan. So did he want to go over to the other side? Is that what convinced them to convert him? We may know down the line, but for right now, the main thing that we know is that he was stopped before he could carry out his desire for a mass attack bigger than the one that happened in Las Vegas. Now let me go on to the next person. So this was Mark Domingo was arrested on April 26th, and the next person I'm going to be talking about was carried out an attack. Unfortunately, he wasn't stopped ahead of time. And his target was Jews and Muslims at two different times. But he's an equal opportunity terrorist or hater. John Ernest is his name. He's 19 years old. And he carried out a shooting attack on the Poway Synagogue in California, in Southern California. It's a Chabad. It's actually called the Chabad of Poway, and it's north of San Diego. This date that he chose, April 27th, is the last day of Passover, and it was a Saturday, so there were 100 people inside the synagogue for the Sabbath. Not only, Saturday, there usually are services at synagogues for a Sabbath, Saturday morning, but this was a special service, which he undoubtedly probably knew about, that it was going to be a longer service. And it was special in that it was going to last longer because it was related to the last day of Passover and there was going to be a meal and so on. So it was, you know, so it certainly had more people there than a typical Saturday. This was an event that they were doing to mark the last day of Passover. And this date was also 6 months to the day after the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting. So, you know, did he follow, he's a smart guy. He was an honor student. So did he follow the path of ISIS in that, he picked a day with significance, and perhaps this particular temple, although it wasn't very far from where he lived, it's the Chabad is a particularly religious synagogue. So did he pick that one at that time for all these reasons? Probably. Now, fortunately, his gun jammed, and I think that was God doing that. His gun jammed, and so his attack only, right, caused one person to die, and it injured three people, including the rabbi, Rabbi Israel Goldstein. The rabbi lost his finger. But a woman in the congregation, Lori Kay, 60 years old, who apparently was a really respected woman in the congregation, not only was she a big donor, but she also volunteered her time a lot to the temple. And she was like one of the most revered, appreciated people in the temple. And she jumped in front of the rabbi to protect him, and she got killed. That is bravery. This man, after he left the temple when his gun got jammed, he drove away 2 miles. He got 2 miles away, and he stopped and he called 911. He wanted to be caught. Now, his story is that he was homeschooled until high school. His father was a physics teacher at his high school. Then he has been graduated from high school, and he was at the time of this massacre, time of this attack. He was in nursing school at Cal State San Marcos. Now, before the attack on the temple, he tried to set fire, not on the same day, a month or so before, he tried to set fire to a mosque. And that didn't work out. It didn't catch fire. They weren't able to catch him. They didn't, he wasn't on, if there was a video, he wasn't caught on video. They didn't know who tried to start that fire. So he wasn't caught for that. John Ernest doesn't have any criminal history, or didn't until now. He had been planning to do a video live stream like the New Zealand terrorist did. Boy, this New Zealand terrorist has spawned a lot of copycats, or at least people who are blaming their attack on him. John Ernest made an open letter. He wrote an open letter that came up on 8chan, another online, about an hour before his attack. He blamed the Jews for the genocide of the European race, and he blamed Jews for other things as well, which is kind of absurd because Jews, there are European Jews, I hate to tell him. Lots of them, or there were lots before the Holocaust. He cited Breton Tarrant, the New Zealand shooter, and his killer in his online rants. He also cited Robert Bowers, the Pittsburgh shooter, the Pittsburgh synagogue shooter. His arson attempt was in March on an Escondido mosque. Now, he was raised in an Orthodox Presbyterian family. His family, his parents, are disavowing him, claiming they don't know how this could happen. In fact, they said, how our son was attracted to such darkness is a terrifying mystery to us. Really, guys? Maybe you should have been finding out, paying more attention to him, so it wouldn't be such a mystery. Now, he has five siblings in this religious Christian family. And, you know, that's a lot of kids to take to keep track of. But, you know, I think they should have been keeping better track of him. And, in fact, I think we need to start something where parents of terrorists, you know, radical Islamist terrorists, or any kind of haters who perpetrate terror kinds of attacks, whether it's school shooters or these kinds of attacks like I'm talking about, parents... particularly if the shooter the attacker is less than 21 years old, I think parents should be fined and put in jail. They should be arrested as well. And if their child is found guilty, they should pay a fine and be put in jail for a certain amount of time themselves. Maybe then parents will pay more attention to what their kids are doing. It's pretty sad that we would have to threaten parents with those kinds of things in order to get them to pay attention to their kids. So the parents are, you know, they're saying he was raised with no hate in his life, and they're not going to pay for his defense. Now, I'll bet, just watch this and see, I'll bet that they may change their tune because the death penalty is on the table. It's life without parole or the death penalty. And when it comes down to it, I mean, he'll probably plea. He'll probably make a plea deal. But when it comes down to it, I think they will pay the defense when they start to realize that maybe their son will be executed. Perhaps not. Perhaps it's more important to them to be seen as people who have nothing to do with this kind of thinking, this kind of hate. But we'll see. He was, just like the other hater was, you know, took care of stray cats. This John Ernest was a pianist. He was an honor student. He was an athlete. He was quiet. Always a sign. Always a sign of something lurking under the surface. And he was a nursing student. I mean, you know, he wanted to take care of people, help people. They have so far been, it's been reported that he has been radicalized over the last 2 years. Because they're, what they mean is, you know, radicalized in terms of hate. Because before then, before 2 years ago, he had friends who were Jews and blacks. And he has said, John Ernest himself has said, if you told me even 6 months ago that I would do this, I would have been surprised. And then he wrote online just an hour before his attack, he wrote, I'm just a normal dude who wanted to have a family, help and heal people, and play piano. He said he planned this attack for 4 weeks. And he said, I'm a testament to the fact that literally anyone can do this. That is unfortunately very true. So what is the answer? You know, the antidote to radical Islamist hate is love. And the antidote to any hate that is popping up now against moving targets, the flavor of the month, means that we need all the more love. It is really, I mean, how many more attacks on how many different kinds of targets do there have to be before we start taking this more seriously, folks, in terms of really, really making an effort to provide love, not just to your family and friends, but even to strangers, lost strangers. Well, thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism4kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.